I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
They made the ultimate sacrifice and will never be forgotten, honoring service and pausing to remember.
Gathering in gratitude to show our collective thanks, a country united in its recognition for those who have given so much. Good evening. This day of remembrance and reflection marking a return of larger in-person ceremonies.
A moment to contemplate and consider the selflessness of the men and women who stand on guard. CTV's Austin Delaney begins our coverage outside Old City Hall. Austin.
And such a change from last year when the ceremony was held virtually. Today, both military and civilian personnel, they packed that intersection at Queen and Bay to pay their respect to our fallen.
As the old City Hall clock tower chimed 11 times on the 11th hour, a quiet hush fell over those gathered at the cenotaph to remember those never to be forgotten. Their heads bowed in quiet prayer, some wiping a tear. For Bill Campbell, a veteran of the Korean War, it is the 2 minutes of silence that is most difficult for him on this day.
Moment of silence, I cry. Because the ones that didn't come back, you know, I can visualize it.
High above the somber crowd, Second World War Harvard aircraft rumbled across the gray sky, breaking off into the missing man formation as they flew over the cenotaph.
In Flanders fields, the poppies blow, between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place.
Back on the ground, John McCrae's First World War poem, In Flanders Field, was read by Sarah Gallant of the Vimy Foundation.
We are the dead. Short days ago, we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow.
Both civilians and military paying tribute to our fallen filled the intersection at Queen and Bay Streets. 12-year-old Ross Francis says attending the ceremony is the right thing to do.
I feel honored to be a Canadian. Like, the sacrifices our men made. For me to be here on this day is, like, very honorable.
Also among them, the Taylor family, who come every year, always emotional, says Andrea.
It's just, we're lucky to be free, to be able to do what we can do, right? It's just, I always get sentimental out here. Just, I think of my grandfather, the struggles and what people have gone through to be for us to be here today and to live free. So it's a fantastic day.
Noting the large crowd back again this year to pay tribute to our war heroes and veterans, Mayor John Tory said, it is our duty to honor and never forget each and every soldier.
I would be remiss if I did not mention the Indigenous veterans who fought in these wars and participated in these peacekeeping missions. As history shows, they served, but they're often underrepresented in Remembrance Day ceremonies and recognition. For generations, Indigenous veterans were not recognized for their service.
The year of the poppy wreath laid by Marvin Gordon, 101 years of age, a Second World War veteran.
And the mayor points out that over the last century, nearly 10,000 Torontonians did not return from war and peacekeeping missions. Nathan?
All right, thank you, Austin. At Queen's Park, the bravery and sacrifice of our soldiers was honored during a ceremony at the Veterans Memorial.
Those who served at home and abroad were spoken of with great reverence for what they have done.
Remembrance Day is a time all Ontarians pay tribute and honor the memory of those who have sacrificed for us and show our gratitude to those heroes who still walk among us.
The Premier highlighted the effort of the more than 40,000 Canadians who served in Afghanistan. 158 of our armed forces members died fighting for peace and freedom in the war-torn country. Today, the sacrifices of those soldiers and others were on the minds of those who also wore the uniform.
It's history. It's remembering our past and remembering our present and our future, you know, of people like us who have served, who went to war and helped to make this nation.
The work of armed forces members during the pandemic was also recognized today. They've been providing relief and support whenever called upon across the country. This is the second Remembrance Day of the pandemic, and the crowd today was bigger than last year.
More than 2.3 million Canadians have served in uniform, and over 120,000 have made the ultimate sacrifice.
And in Ottawa today, like across the rest of the country, people paused to show their respect and gratitude. CTV's Glenn McGregor reports.
The ranks of those who fought for Canada grow thinner every year. Only a few dozen gathering again at the National War Memorial in person after last year's virtual Day of Remembrance. Seated at social distance to guard against a different kind of enemy still taking lives around the world. The Prime Minister arrived 11 minutes behind schedule because of a security issue. A suspicious package found near the memorial. Police investigated. It turned out not to be a threat. The delay caused the interruption of a moment of silence to announce another arrival.
Arriving now is Her Excellency, the Right Honourable Mary May Simon, Governor General of Canada.
Among those coming to express thanks, some who didn't wear the uniform but still stood with Canadians in battle, like Mariam Sahar, who served as an interpreter in Afghanistan before coming to Canada.
They are making your life better, and that's the reason I participate in the Remembrance Day, to show my gratitude to these honorable and brave people who sacrificed so much to make sure we live in a peaceful and safe world.
The cost of that sacrifice in a country still in strife, well known to Canada's top soldier.
We did everything that we were asked to do, and we served with honor. We gave the country time. We gave the people of Afghanistan time. But regardless, part of our soul is still in that country, and it deeply pains us to see what has happened there.
The lives lost in Afghanistan were marked by the choice of this year's Silver Cross mother. José Simard's daughter, Karine Blay, was killed by a roadside bomb near Kandahar in 2009, just 21 years old. The sounds are mostly the same heard at ceremonies held every year since the Great War. But many observed a newer tradition, leaving their own silent symbols of thanks on the tomb of the unknown soldier. Glenn McGregor, CTV News, Ottawa.
Remembrance Day also top of mind today at Sunnybrook Hospital. The sounds of bagpipes ringing out this morning outside the Sunnybrook Veterans Center. It was one of the several tributes to the building's residents for Remembrance Day. Look at this, a sea of 30,000 Canadian flags covering the lawn outside the center as part of an annual tradition and fundraiser called Operation Raise a Flag.
It means so much to the veterans to get up this morning and see these flags on. Like, I'm teary just hearing them. I just talked to a veteran in the hall, and he said, today is our day.
I thank the Lord and thank everybody that I'm around to even talk about it, okay? Yeah. And it's a big day for me.
Military planes flew past in a Remembrance Day salute this morning as veterans and their loved ones marched to the Sunnybrook Cenotaph, remembering those who did not make it home and honoring their sacrifices.
And the city of Brampton held its official Memorial Day ceremony this morning in Kenwillan Square. Veterans and members of the public gathered around the cenotaph, where wreaths were laid in honor of Canada's fallen soldiers. The event was held alongside the Royal Canadian Legion. Residents were able to take part virtually. And our online team has a compilation of how this day is being marked across the GTA. You can find that coverage at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Just ahead, who is teaching your child? Turns out that's the question some parents in Durham are asking. Why the board is turning to so-called uncertified teachers to fill supply gaps and how they're looking to reassure families. So your forecast, windy at times, but dry so far on this Remembrance Day. Jessica Smith is here. Jessica, are you seeing any rain yet?
It's rolling in and around the Windsor area, and this large low pressure system, we've been watching it for the past few days. It's finally going to track in towards southern Ontario as we head through the overnight. So a rainy and potentially stormy night ahead of us as it continues to make its way east. and heading in towards us as we head through the later hours this evening. Wind gusts right now out of the east around 20 kilometers an hour through Toronto, but the gusts a little stronger than that. They're around 35. They will stay pretty breezy as we head through the overnight and into the day tomorrow, and then we're watching for a little bit of a clearing. But temperature-wise, we're still holding on to a lot of warmth around the majority of southwestern Ontario, including through the Toronto Islands and Pearson airports. But tonight, we're watching for that rain. The good news, we stay above seasonal. The maybe less than good news, we're watching for some pretty breezy conditions. Nathan.
All right, thank you, Jessica. Straight ahead, the reopening roadmap changes course. The potential impact of rising COVID case counts as Ontario hits pause on lifting some capacity limits.
But first to an unsettling scene for residents of an Ajax neighborhood.
A fatal shooting on their street. Neighbors say they could hear the gunshots. CTV's John Musselman is live on Pembrey Drive near Kingston and Westney with more. John.
Well, Nathan, as you can see behind me, police still have this street sealed off. Police were canvassing the neighbors here for any information. The man was shot in the home behind me.
Durham Regional Police say they were called to this house on Pembrey Drive just before 4:30 this morning. Neighbors reported hearing the sound of gunshots.
They arrived on scene. They did locate one male party, a 33-year-old male. He had suffered gunshot wounds. He was transported by EMS to a trauma center in Toronto, where he was later pronounced deceased.
Police have not released the identity of the man who was killed. The home is located near Westney Road, just north of the 401. This man says he is a friend of the man who lives there. He hasn't been told who was shot, but he says his friend lives in the home with his girlfriend and their three dogs.
I just say, as far as I know about him, he loves comics. He loves anything to do with that. That's just him. I don't know. This is just weird.
Jemmett says his friend is the father of two children, but they don't live with him. Neighbors who did not want to appear on camera tell CTV News there have been issues at this home before. In the summer, they say the car covered underneath the tarp had its windows smashed in with a baseball bat. Shortly after, security cameras were installed around the home. Durham Regional Police say the homicide squad has taken over this case. There is no suspect information at this time, and investigators say it's too early to determine the motive for this murder.
And police are looking for any surveillance video. They're asking anyone with any information about this case to call Crime Stoppers or Durham Regional Police. Reporting live in Ajax, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back inside to you.
Thank you, John. Meanwhile, in Oshawa, a long police standoff has now come to an end at a home in the area of Olive Avenue and Wilson Road. Police tell us one person is in custody. The incident forced three Oshawa schools to spend several hours in hold and secure.
When it comes to someone's job title, uncertified probably isn't something many people feel comfortable hearing. And what about in your child's classroom?
For the school board in Durham, that's the reality, the result of significant staffing shortages. CTV's Janice Golding explains.
The Durham District School Board says it's one of the few school boards in Ontario experiencing growth, with more than 75,000 students at 131 schools and learning centres. But while its student body has increased, the number of available supply teachers has dropped.
And we've just noted that on a daily basis we have unfilled.
As a result, central board staff, principals and vice principals are being reallocated to cover classes.
Here we hired 467 permanent teachers in the fall, so that depleted some of our supply roster. We've had other additional leaves and absences related to the pandemic as well.
Which is why the board has taken the unusual move of posting a job ad for hundreds of uncertified emergency supply teachers. The qualifications, a teaching degree isn't necessary, but candidates must be currently enrolled in a university degree program or have completed a degree, have experience working or volunteering with children and or adolescents, and experience working with students with different cultural backgrounds and with differing needs and capabilities.
As long as they do their due diligence.
Not good. I mean, the whole point of, you know, sending your kids to school is to have a certified teacher that has gone and done the schooling in the background.
The education minister says while this has always been permitted for exceptional circumstances.
But like any parent, no one likes that. I mean, we want more educators to step forward. There is a shortage in the province.
And of course, we have provided about $300 million to all school boards, including Durham.
The Durham District School Board says while it understands parents may have some concerns, it will be requiring applicants to provide a criminal background check with the vulnerable sector and that they meet the vaccination protocol.
I think it's important to know that we're vetting very carefully. We're also going to provide specific training.
Each school will be assigned 2 to 3 uncertified emergency supply teachers. At this point, the DDSB says it's received more than 400 applications and it will begin the interview process next week. The board hopes to have uncertified supply teachers available within the next 2 to 3 weeks. Janice Golding, CTV News.
And staying with education, as of next year, students entering grade 9 won't be split into separate course levels like academic and applied. Ontario is the only province that uses a streaming system. The Ministry of Education says offering one standardized course removes barriers and offers more pathways after high school. Grade 9 math has already been de-streamed as of this fall. Science, English, geography, and French will follow suit in September 2022.
To the pandemic next, and some figures getting some serious attention.
Ontario is seeing a 46% jump in new COVID-19 cases from the same day last week. Public Health Ontario is reporting 642 new cases in its most recent update. That's the highest single-day number since October 9th. 397 of those cases are among those who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. Nearly 30,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 2.1%. So what do those numbers mean for the next steps in Ontario's pandemic response?
The government already moving to pause some reopening measures. Our Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live in Mississauga tonight with more. Colin.
Well, now public health officials, Michelle, are concerned enough that they say the province should rethink whether proof of vaccination requirements should be lifted in January, as the government is planning to do. This after the Ford government paused its reopening plan yesterday. At the Candles Banquet Hall in Mississauga, wedding contracts had to be reviewed today to keep up with capacity limits.
You know, who had a higher number of guests, which room they were in, we have to shift them around. Is the date still going to be working out for them if they have 300 or 400 people and they are in mid-November? So there's a lot of things to think about.
The Ford government paused the reopening plan for 28 days yesterday amid a concerning rise in cases. Across the province, new cases are up, and the 7-day average sits at 532, up 28% from this time last week. The reasons behind the surge can vary. In Peel Region, for example, banquet halls have led to outbreaks.
The places where we have seen outbreaks in the region of Peel have been situations where the people have been non-compliant with masking, certification, and other precautions.
In other regions of the province, low vaccination rates have been a contributing factor, while province-wide, schools account for the greatest number of setting-based outbreaks. Public health officials say the colder weather will drive people indoors and drive up the case count, jeopardizing the province's plan to lift the proof of vaccination requirements in January.
If things continue to worsen, perhaps they'll continue to look at all the other measures to make sure that they're doing what's needed to keep Peel residents as well as all of us in Ontario safe.
Meanwhile, business owners are asking the Ford government for financial help.
3 ballrooms, 200 events a year. If you cut us down again by 50%, we still got to pay rent, we still got to pay bills, and yeah, things add up.
Something the government is not committing to. We're going to get a better idea tomorrow of where all of these trends are heading. The Ontario COVID-19 Science Advisory Table is going to be releasing fresh modeling projections to really map out how these cases are going to trend over the next few weeks. Reporting live in Mississauga, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. Currently, 422 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to more than 591,000 over the course of the pandemic. 5 additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 916 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 74 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 62 in York Region. Peel has 61 new cases, with 24 in Niagara and 22 in Durham. Halton Region has 16 new cases, with 12 in Hamilton.
Across the province, nearly 88.6% of eligible people have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and nearly 85.3% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents more than 11.1 million people in Ontario.
We're hearing tonight from the owner of a dog who bit a boy just days after it was released from animal services. The dog had been seized under suspicion of being part pit bull. The bite happened 4 days later at a Taekwondo studio.
You know, Mohammed, I wish you speedy recovery. I wish that this had never happened, but it happened. Let's move forward in a positive direction. I hope that you get your mental health back, and I hope that, you know, the injury heals and then you'll have normal life. But I just wish that you told the truth.
We heard from Mohammed Almataz Alzghul last night. He needed more than 20 stitches on his face following the incident. The boy claims after class ended, an instructor told him he needed to get over his fear of dogs. Tommy Cham alleges the narrative being portrayed by the boy and his family is false. And while it's not being released at the moment, Chang claims security camera video paints a different picture of the incident. CTV News has seen the video, which shows the boy interacting with the dog about a half dozen times before the bite. Chang adds his business and family have been targets of threats and says the dog in question has now been relocated.
Canada's 20-year mission in Afghanistan is over, and our troops have been brought home.
Some of the Afghans who helped Canada during its mission have managed to get to Canada, but others remain trapped and in grave danger. CTV's Geneviève Beauchemin reports.
Finally, we got our new home, yeah.
Home, a Toronto apartment more than 10,000 kilometers and a world away from battlefields where Afghans served alongside Canada's soldiers.
I used to be interpreter with Canadian forces.
Assigned to the Zari district.
Pashmul South PSS was the most dangerous area in the whole world on that time in 2009.
It was his duty, he says, to help those who had come to help his homeland torn apart by the Taliban's terror.
Don't throw rocks at us, and then you.
But interpreters put their lives at risk to be eyes and ears for Canada's mission.
We saved lots of army's life. We saved lots of local people's life.
The fall of Kabul put those who collaborated with coalition forces and their families in the Taliban's sights. And on that day, former interpreter Hujat was among those running for their lives. Waving his Canadian passport, he found an escape route.
I just entered a military plane, like with hundreds of people.
He's somewhere in that crowd. That photo made headlines around the world.
All those allies who years and years worked for them.
Veterans frustrated with the pace of Canada's evacuation set out on their own mission to rescue those who had stood shoulder to shoulder with them.
He wore a Canadian uniform when he was alongside us. These interpreters, they weren't just casual contractors sitting in an office. They were on the front lines with us.
Those at this backyard barbecue in suburban Toronto all fled Afghanistan.
Khaled was a former interpreter.
Sangin Mateen was an interpreter, too. He left his homeland in 2012 and is now helping others settle in.
And I'm so proud that I'm helping, and I'm so proud that I've served the Canadian military.
He worked with retired Captain Richard Dumas.
In no time at all, I knew he was an outstanding individual, had the courage and the integrity.
Mateen says he's grateful for Dumas and other veterans' help getting his family to Canada.
Guys like Sangin are actually model Canadians. They know what it's like. They've been there. They've done it.
But many other former interpreters are still in hiding, fearing for their lives.
It's a really bad situation for us. So we're praying all the time God will help us. I hope someone help us.
And so veterans like Corey Shelson continue their mission. As he does every November 11th, he remembers the three soldiers who died in action under his command today. But also this year, the interpreters left behind.
And the respects that I pay on Remembrance Day will be focused towards those individuals because they too served Canada and they made a sacrifice. And unfortunately, they're still there.
And they too say veterans deserve to call Canada home.
For my kids, I'm sure that they will have a good future.
In Belgium, Canadians fought bravely in both the First and Second World Wars. And this morning, an Armistice Day ceremony was held in Ypres. That is where, in April of 1915, the 1st Canadian Division fought with great courage to hold back a German offensive. It was our country's first major engagement of the war. Following the battle, Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae wrote in Flanders Fields.
France is also marking Armistice Day. At a ceremony in Paris, President Emmanuel Macron placed a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier. He also spoke about the sacrifices of those who fought for the ideals of his country.
The UK is also paying tribute. Hundreds of veterans took part in a ceremony at the Cenotaph War Memorial in London. The armistice was signed 103 years ago, bringing an end to the First World War. British military personnel who lost their lives in subsequent conflicts were also honored today.
Meanwhile, Buckingham Palace confirmed today the Queen will attend a national service of remembrance on Sunday. The 95-year-old monarch will watch the ceremony at the Cenotaph Memorial from a balcony. Her Majesty was advised by doctors recently to rest. She has continued to work from home.
Still ahead tonight, reflecting on the sacrifices in the name of service. Toronto students get a special Remembrance Day lesson on Canada's most decorated war hero, a man whose accomplishments were almost forgotten.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, cryptocurrency fraud is on the rise. We speak with two Toronto women who say they lost more than $100,000. They thought they were investing in cryptocurrencies, but they were scammed. We can tell you how to protect yourself. I'll have that story just ahead.
Despite the showers rolling through this evening, we remain above seasonal with our lows really right across southwestern Ontario. Toronto dropping down to 9, and we will see that rain clear out as we head into the early morning hours tomorrow for at least a little bit. We remain with this warm trend. Your high yesterday, 13 degrees, today around 12, but it will change as we head in towards the weekend as this front moves out and cooler weather settles in as we head into Saturday and Sunday. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Authorities say during the pandemic, Canadians lost more than $50 million to cryptocurrency fraud.
Some scammers are using social media websites and dating apps to try and find victims to steal their money. Pat Foran has the story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Thanks, Michelle and Nathan. Two women contacted us saying they lost more than $100,000 in cryptocurrency scams. They met people online who promised them huge returns and easy money, but in the end, they lost every dollar they thought they invested.
A Toronto woman who asked us not to identify her was on Facebook when someone said they could show her how to make money fast investing in cryptocurrencies.
After we started the trade option, I was, amazed because my money went up really quick.
She started out investing a few thousand dollars, but eventually handed over $24,000.
I put all my money, like my savings, I even withdraw my RSP and put it there.
When she went to take the money out, she was told she had to pay more in taxes and fees. She lost it all.
I feel like devastated. Like I really don't know what to do right now. And then I'm thinking about the money that I borrowed to my friend, even my savings, like my RSP is gone.
Another woman who asked us not to identify her says she invested in crypto after connecting with someone on a dating website.
They would boast about their trading accounts, how much they made. And then they would ask you if you would be all right with them teaching you how to trade.
She also started off with a few thousand, but kept putting in more.
So now I'm really freaking out because I'm like 80,000 in and I really need that money. I know the money is gone. It's probably all gone.
I think this is the really hard part about crypto is finding a trustworthy source. And
David Khalif is a cryptocurrency expert who says scammers are using social media as a tool to find victims.
It's really just a matter of understanding that the person across the screen, if you don't know them, they could be anyone in the world.
Khalif says investors should only deal with trustworthy exchanges. If you send money to a scammer, it's almost impossible to get it back.
And unfortunately, there is no way to get that money back once you send it on the blockchains.
Because I authorize the e-transfers, I authorize the cash withdrawals, it's all on me. The banks cannot say it's fraud. So there's no way I'm getting any of the money back. I want people to know because I think more and more people will fall victim to this.
And the two women say they're embarrassed to lose so much money and haven't told their families. While more than $50 million has been lost to crypto fraud during the pandemic, officials believe it's much higher because most losses are not reported. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
We're a little windy today, but at least we were still above seasonal, but that's going to change, especially over the next few days, right?
Things are shifting, and the double digits are great that we're getting for November, but when you do have the clouds, when you do have that wind, it gives you that November chill, Jessica.
It, like, sneaks up your jacket, you know? It catches you off guard every single time, and we're going to trend a little closer to where we should be, so the mitts, the gloves, the hats, you're going to need all of it as we really head in towards the weekend, depending on how you like to participate in the cooler weather. Holding on to some of that warmth through southern Ontario. To the north, a different story. They're cooling down. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. Now, the cooler weather that has rolled through, it is going to continue through northern Ontario. To the south, we will feel that shift as we head in towards our Friday evening and then in towards the weekend. We're already looking at those negative temperatures through Pickle Lake, Red Lake. We're looking at temperatures around -2. Geraldton, you're at -1. And we're going to see this kind of cool down roll through. Tonight, though, comfortable and above seasonal. 9 degrees is where we wrap up our day. Again, watching that low, we've been keeping an eye on it for the past few days. It tracks through really late this evening and into the early morning hours tomorrow. And we finish the day at 9 degrees, and we start tomorrow at 9 as well. Now, as we make our way through the day tomorrow, we will see a few peaks of sunshine, but we're not out of the woods for that active weather just yet. As the system rotates counterclockwise, we're likely to see it return a little later on in the day. Again, it just looks like this big green blob on the map. That is all of that rain with some embedded thunderstorms in there. To the north, it falls more the purples and the blues, and that just means a messy mix, so a rain snow mix or snow. So for northern Ontario, it has started off with the first blast of winter for them. Now, as we get in towards our weekend, we're looking at the chance of some messy weather, and then the potential for snow is for us in southern Ontario in towards next week. But the low moves rather quickly, but again, as the system continues to rotate counterclockwise, that's what brings the chance of active weather, the waves of it, as we head into the day tomorrow and really through our weekend. It moves pretty quickly, and as we head through around 10:30, that's when the bulk of it is going to make its way through Toronto and the greater Toronto area. By 6 a.m. tomorrow, it's past us, and we have a relatively sunny start to the day. But heading in towards the supper hour tomorrow, again, it rotates back through, and that's when we see the chance for a messy mix. Our friends in Niagara, they could be seeing their first real blast of winter as we head in towards our Friday and Saturday. Saturday, Sunday, the chance of showers for both days. Cooler, just single-digit daytime highs. And getting in towards Monday, the chance of mixed precipitation. There's that chance of a little bit of snow out there. So we're going to have to start preparing for the cooler weather. Nathan.
Thank you, Jessica. Also tonight, one of Canada's biggest contributions to the world, marking the upcoming 100th anniversary of a discovery that greatly impacted science and healthcare.
This Sunday is World Diabetes Day, marking the 100th anniversary of the discovery of insulin.
It's also the birthday of Sir Frederick Banting, the Canadian doctor who made the finding. Our health reporter Pauline Chan looks at the impact his work has had on millions today.
100 years ago, someone like Nicole Cleaver would have never lived to enjoy her family.
Very busy. I am always on the go from the moment my feet hit the floor.
It's all thanks to the discovery of insulin. Before 1921, diabetes was thought to be a disease of the kidneys, marked by high sugar in the urine. Surgeon Dr. Frederick Banting removed the pancreas of a dog to mimic human diabetes. He then injected insulin extracted from the pancreas and cured the dog.
Perhaps one of the biggest contributions that Canada has made to science and healthcare around the world.
But insulin then was quite unstable.
It was an extremely crude product. It was initially an extract from animal pancreases.
Through the decades, it was purified, and in the 1970s, they switched from insulin extracted from pigs and cows to a genetically developed product, and more recently created a human insulin analog.
Because now we can prescribe insulins that are much safer, with less hypoglycemia.
Cleaver first developed diabetes when she was pregnant.
I probably wouldn't live to this age. I'm almost 50. I'm creeping up there. And my lifespan probably would have been in the 30s.
And as she celebrates the 100th anniversary of insulin, she is truly grateful.
We go geocaching with the dog. We go out on the walks. We do lots of fun stuff. So if I wasn't in control, I wouldn't be able to do those things.
The discovery earned Banting and John McLeod a Nobel Prize. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
A sad development to share with you out of Houston, Texas. One of the people hurt in last week's music festival, Crush, has died in hospital.
She was always looking out for me. The last thing she said to me was, "Are you okay?"
The family of 22-year-old Barti Shahani says she was critically injured and had been on life support. Her death brings the number of lives lost at the Travis Scott concert to 9. Today, the rapper urged victims of last Friday's stampede to contact him directly so he can provide them with help. The incident is still under investigation.
In London, the Duchess of Sussex has apologized for misleading Britain's Court of Appeal. Meghan sued a tabloid earlier this year for publishing parts of a letter she wrote to her estranged father. During the trial, there were suggestions she and Prince Harry had contributed to a biography about them. Meghan rejected that notion, but her former communications chief has now produced emails and text messages to the contrary. Meghan says she forgot.
Matthew McConaughey is trying to clarify comments he made recently about COVID-19 vaccinations. The actor told the New York Times he would be against the idea of a COVID-19 vaccine mandate for children ages 5 to 11. Today, he wrote on Instagram, "What is not true is that I am against vaccinating kids at all," adding, "This is false. In fact, our eldest 13-year-old son, Levi, is fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Observers say the Oscar winner could be speaking up on more issues as he considers a run for governor of Texas.
Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell both appeared on late-night talk shows last night, just not the ones they were supposed to be on.
Will called.
Okay.
Said he was running a little late.
Okay.
Asked me if I'd jump in for him.
Yeah.
And I said, anything for you, Will.
That was Reynolds' explanation to Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show. At the same time, Jimmy Kimmel Live, Will Ferrell was on that show telling a very similar story. The two hosts just played along, with Ferrell facing questions about Reynolds' family and ongoing projects and vice versa.
Adele's next album's out next week, and the singer's opening up about her plans after that happens. The Grammy Award winner did an interview with Rolling Stone magazine. She said it's not clear if she's going to tour anytime soon because of ongoing concerts about or concerns about the pandemic. Adele added that as a Las Vegas residency isn't on her schedule, despite earlier rumors. Her new album, 30, drops November 13th.
Meanwhile, Taylor Swift's latest album drops in just a few hours, and she's also sharing new details about an accompanying film. After publishing a trailer for the short film based on her song All Too Well, the singer released this poster for the project starring Sadie Sink, Dylan O'Brien, and herself. Swift is re-recording her previous albums because of a music rights dispute. Red, Taylor's version, is out at midnight.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
CTV Tonight. We've got what you want. Settle in for the night with some great TV. It all starts at 7 tonight, right here on CTV.
The struggles of what people have gone through to be for us to be here today and to live free.
Updating our top stories, Toronto pauses in solemn gratitude. A Remembrance Day ceremony was held at Old City Hall this morning, paying tribute to those who fought for Canada and vowing never to forget their sacrifices.
They arrived on scene. They did locate one male party, a 33-year-old male. He had suffered gunshot wounds.
The fatal shooting took place early this morning on Pembrey Drive in Ajax. Police have not released the identity of the victim. There are no suspects yet, and it's too early to determine a motive.
Here we hired 467 permanent teachers in the fall, so that depleted some of our supply roster.
The number of available supply teachers at the Durham District School Board has dropped, so a job ad has been posted for hundreds of uncertified emergency supply teachers. A teaching degree isn't necessary, but they must at least be enrolled in university.
Remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video breaking news, let us know.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down 51 basis points to 79.46 U.S. American benchmark oil gained 25 cents a barrel to close at 81.59. And the TSX Composite Index gained 120 points to close at 21,582.
Inflation may be raising the cost of everyday goods, but those concerns didn't slow down the markets today. The TSX Composite Index touched a record high as stocks rallied on both sides of the border. There are concerns the rising cost of consumer goods could put pressure on corporate profits going forward, but investors have seen a mostly positive run of earnings in recent weeks.
Loosened public health rules meant more Canadians were heading to the movies over recent months. Cineplex says theater attendance surged more than 400% over its most recent quarter compared to last year. 8.3 million people took in a film compared to just 1.6 million a year earlier. The company says Shang-Chi and The Legend of Ten Rings was its biggest draw, but the company still lost over $33 million for that portion of 2021.
It was a solid quarter for Indigo Books and Music. The retailer says revenue surpassed pre-pandemic levels, nearly hitting $240 million. The company says the growth came from a jump in online sales, which were up 85% year over year. Indigo says purchases at brick-and-mortar stores are still lagging behind, but customers who came to shop demonstrated a strong commitment to books and its lifestyle brand. Remembrance Day is an opportunity to thank those who serve and hear their stories.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Jackie Crandall's. Jackie, what an amazing platform you have to speak with veterans who served in Afghanistan.
Yeah, Remembrance Day, of course, a day to reflect and to honor those who have served our country. And we'll be doing that tonight on CP24 tonight. We'll be reflecting on the mission in Afghanistan, most notably, and of course, the withdrawal of troops back in August. We'll be speaking with Major General David Fraser and Corporal Bruce Moncour. He was the founder of Afghan Vets of Canada. The Major served in Afghanistan as well. They both did. So we'll be talking about them, talking to them rather, asking them to sort of reflect on their missions and but what, you know, Remembrance Day means for them now.
And also, Jack, you'll be taking a closer look at the province's decision to end streaming for grade 9 students.
Yeah, streaming initially introduced as a way to give students more choice when they entered high school. It had the complete opposite impact for marginalized students, students of color, Indigenous students, and those from low-income families. And so now the province is scrapping it. In 2022, grade 9 students will not be given options or streaming options. So we'll look at the impacts of that, what the lasting impact has been for students who have been part of that process in the last few generations.
All right. Thank you, Jackie.
Okay.
And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
Just ahead, a poignant field trip on this Remembrance Day. Hundreds of students visiting the resting place of one of Canada's greatest service people, reflecting on the realities of war.
Tonight, Remembrance Day in the nation's capital delayed by a security scare. Powerful ceremony briefly disrupted after the discovery of a suspicious package. Later on CTV National News.
A meaningful lesson for some Toronto students on this Remembrance Day.
Learning about the most decorated war hero in Canadian history, CTV's Beth McDonnell has the story.
In step along a wall of poppies made to honor those who fought and died.
They were facing fear. Also, they had courage. Our class put a bunch of poppies up there, so when people walk by the school, they can also remember about Remembrance Day and the soldiers.
Down the street, reflecting on the dangers of war.
Someone really close to you could pass away. Something tragic could happen to your home. You really don't know what's going to happen, so that must be really anxiety-inducing for everyone.
200 students from Hodgson Middle School made their way to the resting place of Wing Commander William G. Barker for a Remembrance Day ceremony.
So sad to lose such a legend.
Barker is the most decorated war hero, not just in Canada, but in the history of the British Empire. A century later, his story is thrilling students.
He was so brave and courageous, and when he did a dogfight 15-1, lapsing in and out of consciousness with a bullet shot in his shoulder. He kept flying and he kept fighting.
Barker wasn't always celebrated in this way. He died in a plane crash when he was 35 years old. His accomplishments rediscovered over the last 11 years, this ceremony has taken place.
First president of the Leafs, his connection to the to Toronto. And also, you know, he was an individual who at his funeral, over 50,000 Torontonians lined the streets of the city to honor and remember and say goodbye to him. And so to those young people, they must be thinking now, well, he must have been somebody pretty important. I want to learn a little bit more about him. And it's somebody who is in my neighborhood.
On this Remembrance Day, Barker's legacy flies high. In a salute, two Hercules aircraft flew overhead, paying tribute to him and everyone who made the ultimate sacrifice. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
Well, it was clear sky there, but get ready for some rain headed our way. What are you seeing at this point, Jessica?
Right now, timing-wise, we're looking at about 10 o'clock when it really settles into the GTA, and we're looking at the potential of some embedded thunderstorms as well. So keep that in mind, especially if your pets are maybe a little more sensitive to storms. Now, the bulk of it is going to make its way past us as we head into the early morning hours tomorrow, but keep in mind that as the system rotates counterclockwise, we're likely to see the chance of showers return into the late afternoon and evening tomorrow, and then this messy mix is going to kind of settle in as we head into Saturday and Sunday. And behind this system are much cooler temperatures, a little closer to seasonal and then just below. Heading into our Saturday and Sunday, we're going to see daytime highs in the single digit range between 5 and 4 degrees. Those lows overnight kind of where they should be or just above. And then getting in towards a brand new week, we're looking at, well, much cooler daytime highs, closer to the seasonal norms for this time of year, which is around 8 degrees for that daytime high and 2 overnight. Looking at Monday, the chance of some mixed precipitation. We're watching for it potentially to fall as rain, but because we're cooling down just a little bit, it could fall as that rain snow mix. So hopefully you've got those winter tires on already, or they're going to be on pretty soon. Nathan.
All right. Thank you, Jessica. Be sure to join Raheem Ladani later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. For Jessica Smith and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.
We'll leave you with some sights and sounds from this Remembrance Day.